All right, well, I'm not sure how you're entering into this Advent season, but I feel like I am limping in. if 2020, I don't think a marathon's right. If it was like, what is it, Ironman, ultra marathon? What is it where you almost die before you get to the end of it? Whatever race that is, it's kind of what 2020 feels like. And I know nothing's going to magically change on January 1. I know that's not how it works. And really, technically, this is the first day of the new Christian calendar. So if you want to just call this 2021 now and just etch-a-sketch the whole thing and start, feel free to do that. By the Christian calendar standards, you can. I feel like I'm limping through. To start this Advent season and to start a season of trying to lean into the idea that there is something else on the way and it is not here yet, and to live in that tension is hitting pretty close to home for me. And what I feel like I end up saying each year during Advent, especially during the first couple of weeks, is I know that this text is not very Christmassy. And this is the same as always, right? The Advent texts are not very Christmassy. There's no swaddling clothes and none of that kind of stuff happening yet. Christmas will come, but instead there is prophecy and there is some darkness and there is anticipation of things that aren't here yet that is happening. And that's the way Advent starts. And so in that sense, it's not really a bad start to Advent, I would say. In fact, maybe it's perfect for 2020 as we anticipate and prepare for what God is going to do next. But we are in the Gospel of Mark for the first time in a long time, but we will be spending more time in Mark coming up in this next year. And in Mark, we are in this passage that is prophetic. It is not prophetic in the sense, in my opinion, is not prophetic in the sense of looking at the end times, like Revelation end times kind of stuff, depending on what church you grew up in, and that's kind of how you talked about things. As much as it's talking about what's going to be happening within the lifetime of those that Jesus is talking to, and ultimately the destruction of the temple, which we'll talk about in a minute. And so it's a little bit gloomy, because it's coming right on the heels of Jesus telling everyone that the temple will be destroyed, that not one stone will be left on top of the other. And this is a big deal for those that are listening. And so let's go ahead and read this, and then we'll talk a little bit about that. Mark 13, 24 through 37 says this. But in those days after that suffering, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. Merry Christmas. Okay, verse 25. And the stars will be falling from the heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. He will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth and the ends of heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as the branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Verse 32, but about that day or hour, no one knows. Neither the angels in heavens nor the Son, but only the Father. Be aware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight or at the cockcrow or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep and when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. Again, this is definitely very gloomy, and this comes right on the heel of Jesus telling all the disciples that the temple is going to be destroyed. And that sounds bad to us in the sense of, well, I'm sure it was a very big and pretty building and that kind of thing. It's far more than that to those who are listening, right? The temple for them is the center of their entire world, really. I mean, it's the center of their religious world, their political hopes, their future hopes and dreams for their children and grandchildren. They all center on this one place. It is the place. It is more than just some place you go to worship. It represents who they are, where their hopes are for them and their future generations. For the original readers of the Gospels, so the first ones who would have read Mark, it would have been after the temple was actually destroyed, right? Now, Jesus is telling this to people before that, but the first ones who would have had this scroll and read it, it would have happened already. So they would have known what it was like to have their entire religious and cultural life just gone, the center of it taken away. It's a very heavy thought. That the thing you center yourselves on, the thing that you most identify with and your parents and your grandparents for generations have identified with is just taken from you, right? Who we are, how we live, why we do the things we do, all that is just gone. But it also in some ways, and I'm not trying to over-dramatize 2020 for us, but it kind of feels appropriate for us right now because so much of who we are, so much of our center has gotten snatched from us, right? So many of the things we define ourselves by, so many of the ways we have centered our lives. It's still really strange to think about how quickly everything changed, isn't it? I mean, it just happened like that, and it feels like the new. I watch a TV show from like a year ago, and there's a group of people like in a huddle, and it gives me hives, right? And you see people shaking hands and hugging. They're hugging on TV. Can you believe that, right? And it's just hard to imagine that world again because things have shifted so much. A couple weeks ago, I had two people in one day shake my hand. And I know, and some of you did the same thing. I literally held my hand out to the side until I could get to a bathroom and wash it, like it was instantly infected and I was going to turn into a zombie. I mean, it was like, that's how much my life has changed, right? In just one short year. It's hard to know how to relate to people. It's hard to know what our jobs are. How do we do church? How do we do family? How do we do friendships? How do we do any of this stuff, right? I mean, we're having to ask questions about Christmas time and family that I never thought I'd have to ask. It's hard. Everything has shifted underneath us. And so maybe leaning into this idea and these passages who are written to this group of people, Jesus says it to those who don't know what's coming. The first ones who are reading it know what has happened, and they're on the other side of this catastrophic event. Maybe this is good for us to look at in our current situation. Now, this is a hopeful passage, right? I mean, Jesus is coming back. Jesus is going to do something. Jesus is going to fix things. But it's not Pollyanna. It's not unicorns and rainbows. It's not a sitcom that wraps up in 28 minutes very neatly. It owns the fact that it is and maybe will be for a while bad. Sometimes very bad. But it's not over. The story's not done. And to live in this time, you have to make a choice for those who are originally listening to this and those who are originally reading this. They have to make a choice. Do we let the darkness overtake us? Do we let this become our new defining moment, our new defining reality? Or do we live in the what will be, right? In this hopeful kind of expectation. What is and what is to come. And then Jesus, don't let it put you under, right? Stay awake. Jesus says, stay woke, is what Jesus says. We're going to use it in modern day terms, right? Stay woke. And there's really three things that I think Jesus talks about here. And for those of you that grew up in a traditional church, good news. I've got 3 points, and they all start with the same letter, which kind of gives me an A-plus in sermon writing if you're in my church growing up. And I apologize for it. It wasn't intentional. It just worked out that way. But there's three things that I think Jesus says to those in this situation that I think are worth us considering today. The first thing is watch closely. Watch closely, right? When you see these things taking place, you know he's near. Watch closely. Take your cue from the branch when it starts to do this thing. You know what's coming. Watch closely. There is a call to exercise wisdom, to have your eyes and ears and heart open, to understand what's going on around you, even in the time of difficulties and trials and tribulations, right? And he uses this image again of the fig branch. When it becomes tender, you know. Now understand something. When it comes to this idea of like the fig branch and identifying it, Jesus is not talking about like reading the tea leaves or something. This is not some highly specialized knowledge. You don't have to be a botanist to understand what's going on here, right? He's not letting them in on anything that everyone doesn't already know. This is pretty common knowledge back then. In fact, it'd be almost dumb if you missed it. It's not impressive if you notice. It's bad if you miss it, right? But I think even the most accessible of wisdom does not come easy in these difficult times. Even the most accessible of wisdom does not come easy in these difficult times. I think it would be safe to say that 2020 has not been a real strong year for wisdom. That's safe to say? We don't do amens in this church, but I think that is true. I don't think history will look back at this moment, especially for our culture, and praise it for its abiding wisdom. Between insane conspiracy theories, ignoring basic science, ignoring obvious truths in front of us, fill in the blank, the time we're living in, this struggle has clouded our ability to just look around us and see what is very apparent and true. I'm not sure that we can even honestly say that on average, maybe we're even interested in that understanding as much as we're interested in just having what we already think or want to think affirmed. But Jesus says, keep your eyes open. Watch. Look what's going on around you. There are signs. There's truth right here. It's easy to miss it because things are hard, because it's dark, because it's difficult, because things are falling apart, but don't miss the obvious truths in front of you. And it's easy. It's easy to get lost in our own presuppositions or in our own anger or depression or hurt or whatever it might be and miss what is in front of us, right? But this moment in time, and I really believe this, is one of those things that we'll tell our kids about and our grandkids about kind of thing. This moment in time is telling us something about us individually, communally, as a country, as a world. It is telling us something. Our current politics is telling a truth about us if we just open our eyes and look and see what it is. The civil unrest is telling us something about ourselves. Our approach to the pandemic is revealing something about us. Just go look up the statistic for what percentage of the world Americans make up, population-wise, and what percentage of the infections and deaths we have. That is telling a truth about us and our culture, about who we are. It's right there in front of us. The question is, are we watching closely? Are we learning from what is readily apparent? Because it is easy to miss in the dark days. So the first thing, watch closely. And then maybe even more difficult than that is the second thing. We're called to wait expectantly, right? About this hour, no one knows when it's going to happen, not even the sun, right? No one knows when it's going to happen. Faith in the midst of struggle involves this kind of holy patience, this willingness to believe in what we cannot yet see, an acceptance of the truth that there are some things we will not know ahead of time. A faith that although the resolution of this mess is not clearly laid out, is not easy for us to see, a faith in the idea, in the truth that God is doing something redemptive. That God is in the business of setting things right, that God is in the business of making something beautiful and good out of whatever mess we create. We are not alone, and the story is not done. Right? Because ultimately, Jesus is in the redemption business. God seeks to save the lost, the lonely, the weak, the weary. All describes this year to me. And even in the midst of these difficulties, we can be both resolutely confident in this and at the same time be patient. At the same time, be okay with not knowing when, to not having all the answers. Be patient and comfortable with the question mark. Yes, it will come. We just don't know what it's going to look like. We just don't know when. And this is the kind of waiting, or this is not the kind of waiting for when you don't think someone's going to pull through and you've got those people in your life where you're sitting there and you're unsure if it's going to happen or not. We can be confident in who God is and what God is doing. So Jesus is telling people to watch closely. He's telling them to wait expectantly. And then finally, and maybe this is a really important one for us right now, for me this is very important. Jesus is telling us to work intently. He puts his slaves in charge each week with his work, right? There's this image of the guy going away, leaving everyone else in charge of things. And if you were anything like me, this season has made me really want to check out and shut down. And I don't know, that may not be you. That may not be your standard kind of response to this kind of thing. It is mine. In fact, I'm very grateful for the fact that I had two kids in the house full-time for the first few months. As exhausting as it was something I had to do every day. I had to show up. They have to get fed. They have to get bathed. They have to do this. We had homeschool work to do, which I should never have been a homeschool teacher. I'm not good at it, but we were doing it, right? There was something to get done. Because every time I had about 3 minutes of just me quiet, I just wanted to go to sleep. I just wanted to kind of shut down. And in these seasons, importantly, in these seasons of struggling and waiting, we can't forget that this is when there is the work to do. More than ever, this is where there is work to do. This is precisely the kind of time when people of good faith should be leaning in to their mission. Right, and we talked last week out of Matthew 25 about the calling of Christ's followers to seek God wherever humanity's deepest needs can be found. When I was hungry, when I was thirsty, when I was in prison, fill in the blank, right? Wherever there is hunger and thirst and isolation and injustice and illness, this is where we find God. We are called to act and to serve in those times and in those places. And this is that time and place. The reason why we've chosen Edward Street as our Christmas giving this year is because this is that time and this is that place. There are hungry people. We are called to feed them. It's not time to shut down. It's time to lean in to our mission. It's time to work intently. This year has been and is dark for so many reasons. And we could all sit around and talk about it for a long time and share our own struggles and our own sadness. It is dark for so many reasons, and it is exactly the kind of place where God is working, where God is hiding, and we are called to seek. I know it is sad. I know it is frustrating. I know it is sometimes depressing to see and read what is happening in the world around us or even in our own lives. I know how strong the pull is to withdraw in fear or frustration over the state of everything, to shut it all down and say, call me when it's done. But as we watch closely at what the signs are telling us about ourselves and our world, and as we wait expectantly for what we are faithfully believing God is going to do, we will also work intently on what God has put before us. We are called to watch, we are called to wait, and we are called to work. And what is before us is a world that desperately is in need of hope and love and another way. And as we begin Advent, as we commit ourselves to leaning into this time of waiting, as we own the darkness around us and the light that is to come, let us not neglect these three things before us. Let us watch closely and listen carefully for those truths that are being told about us, even the uncomfortable ones, all around us. Let us wait expectantly for what God is going to do in the midst of this mess, and may we work intently to embody God's love and care and concern for those suffering among us. And then, maybe then, this season, as dark as it might sometimes be, will not be wasted. Let's pray. Our Lord and our God, we are grateful that even in the darkness, you are the light. And that darkness cannot overcome light. God, we are grateful that you are in the midst of doing something that we may not understand, but we can have confidence in that it is good and pure and redemptive. God, we ask for the courage and the wisdom to see what is going on around us. We ask for the holy patience to be able to operate while not knowing the answers. And God, we ask for the courage and the strength to keep working. And as we watch, and as we wait, and as we work, May we be your light in this darkness. God, we do love you, and we ask all these things in your name. Amen.